Hello everyone, welcome to Bossy Books. We are two girls who love to read books together. We formed a little book club and then after a while we decided to take our opinions and laughs into the realm of podcasts. My name is Minju and I'm joined by my friend Heather. Hi Heather!
Hi!
Today's podcast is going to be a little interesting. It should be interesting because the book is weird and a little different and we don't really know what to say about it. But yeah, we're just going to go with the flow. So stay tuned and we'll see what happens. So Heather will just tell us about the book we're reviewing today.
Yeah, so as we announced in our last podcast, the book that we read this month is called What Is Not Yours Is Not Yours. And it's the first short story collection by Nigerian-born British author Helen Oyeyemi. Oyeyemi published her first book when she was 18. And so she's written, I think, like 5 or 6 books now, and she's only 31. She's like our age.
Oh, no.
And I think, Minju, you would agree with me when I say that this book is like nothing else I've ever read.
Yeah,
and,
agreed.
It kind of exists in a different dimension, like both the writing style and the stories that the words create.
Yeah.
You know, each story is unique, but there are a few common threads that run through the whole book. And the central one is keys. Mm-hmm. But there are other recurring images and themes too, like puppets, fairy tales, books, and even characters that pop up again as background figures or main characters in other stories.
Yeah.
So, I would describe this book as like, I found it an easy book to read, but a very difficult book to understand, and an almost impossible one to discuss and review. And that is why this podcast is like a month late, because we both needed, mainly Minju, we both needed.
All right.
I was debating whether or not to throw you under the bus, but I just went for it.
But you did, yep. I was wondering if you would.
Yeah, we needed more time to like reflect on this book so we would actually have something to say about it besides I have no idea what this book is talking about. After a couple of weeks to really like digest this book, do you, Minju, have a better idea of what on earth it's on about?
Yeah, so what happened with me was I was like, oh, yeah, I got this book. I downloaded it onto my Kindle and I'm like, okay, you know, these are short stories. They should be easy and light. Like, this is my, I guess, bias on what I thought short stories should be like, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I was like, yeah, we'll just, you know, I'll read it. It'll be casual. It'll be fun, you know? And then I start reading it. I'm like, what? I'm like, what is going on? Like, I kind of agree with what you said, like it's easy to read, but it's so hard to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, and I felt like each short story should be read in one sitting for me because I could never come back and be like, oh yeah, this is where it was up to, because it follows so many tangents. It doesn't have, a lot of the stories don't seem to have like logical structure kind of, do you know what I mean? I don't know where it's going. I cannot figure out a roadmap of any of these.
Yeah.
And some of the ideas are just so crazy. I'm like, what? How did we end up here? Which story is this? What's going on?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's how I felt. So it took me actually a long time to get through there. And then I was like, and then I have to think about these two and say something interesting. I was like, this is too much. Yeah. So I had to, you know, beg for some more time. And I still kind of feel the same way, but...
Is this the first collection of short stories that you've read?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of a completely new genre for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think maybe I don't get the genre as well, but I think I do now. After with the extra time, I'm like, oh, okay. And then I read some like online reviews and everyone seems to absolutely love it, which is like, makes me feel stupid. I probably am stupid, but it's fine. But I think I get what they're saying.
Yeah.
You know, about the keys and how her ideas are so fresh and like fantasy and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, yeah.
I think our discussion will be helpful because this is the kind of book where you need to throw away certain things and expectations before you start.
Okay, like, yeah, that's it.
You know how you said you expected the story progression to be logical? Like,
yeah,
logic
does
not exist in this world of Helen Oyeyemi. So you have to, like, throw that out the window.
I didn't know.
You know, throw away any like desire to see like clean conclusions to stories or characters or like linear development of these kinds of things.
Yeah, I think you're just meant to enjoy it, the kind of craziness that's and the weirdness and the weird stuff she wants to explore. I think you're just meant to be present.
Yeah.
And like follow along and like relax.
Yeah. It is this weird and wonderful world. I realized as well as I was reading this that like I have a certain way that I read books, and that's been very much shaped by like my, you know, 3-unit English education from high school where you like you read a book and then you think about like what are the themes of this book? What do they mean? And then you think, what are the characters of this book? What journey do they go on? What do they, how do they change? What do they discover about themselves? But no, like this is not one of those books where you can apply those traditional rules of interpretation.
No, yeah. And so I think that really threw me off. And then the more short stories I read, they get crazier. Like, I think the first short story, it might be my favorite because at least I kind of have a grasp on what was going on there. But the rest, some of the other ones, I'm just like, what? Like, what? Why? Who? Like, what? I have nothing else to say, you know, kind of thing.
But, so Books and Roses, that was your favorite story?
Yeah, and actually, that was the only one I reread. And actually, on second reading, I really enjoyed it. Because I think by then, I was like, okay, this book is just crazy and it's not normal. And so I'm just going to like... Yeah, and then I even, so on first reading, I didn't even underline anything because I was just like, But like on this one, I was like, oh, you know, that's nice.
Yeah, so and you readjusted your expectations.
Yeah. And maybe, then people will be like, this is amazing.
I think you're right. Like when you kind of realize what she's doing and what to expect and what not to expect and then reread the stories, it's much better on the second read. And I appreciate that this, that is something that this podcast is helping me appreciate, like the, I guess the joy of the second read, which is something as we've discussed, like I never do. I hate reading things twice, but you know, through this podcast, like I've forced myself to go back and read certain parts of books that I didn't understand in order to, you know, have a better informed view about it. And yeah, like it's, you do really gain a lot on the second read. And I would say the second read is almost always more enjoyable than the first.
I know you reread some of the stories, right? Which ones did you choose to reread?
Well, I chose to reread the ones I liked. Because I didn't have that much time and I didn't really want to waste my time reading the ones that I didn't understand or like. So I reread, I reread Books and Roses.
Yeah.
And then I also read Is Your Blood as Red as This? I think that's what it's called. Mm-hmm. And Presence. Mm-hmm. Those are my three favorites. I would say Presence is probably my favorite.
Presence is crazy.
It's crazy?
I was like, I mean, the whole concept's crazy. Like, I didn't even get it, but I did enjoy it. I think that's the one I would read again next. I feel like there's a lot of depth in it that I didn't catch.
There is. And it kind of introduces the characters in a very like patchy and who are these people? Yeah. Where are they from? Way. But then once you already know that and then go back and read it again, you know, you tend to pick a lot of stuff up. But have you seen the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. It's kind of, it reminded me a lot of that. Because that is kind of like a half fantasy, half reality story about how these people get their memories of a certain person erased if they just want to forget like a traumatic relationship or whatever.
It's like kind it's a of famous movie I haven't seen.
It's like sci-fi, you know, fantasy, which this story is also. So in this story,
Tell them. Sorry.
It kind of just starts out as like this. Introducing you into this couple, and the wife is convinced that her husband is going to ask her to tell her he's going to leave her. But it turns out that that's not at all. They're actually very much in love, and he's a bereavement counselor or something, and he has this kind of new cutting-edge technique where they use chemicals or what it's something mysterious
drugs,
basically drugs. To create this experience for people who are grieving that takes them back to a familiar place and allows them to like experience the presence, almost like the physical presence of the person who they're mourning.
And yeah, who's left.
And
yeah.
it's meant to help them through their grieving process.
Yeah, yeah. But the interesting thing is that, yeah, so he's like, oh, do you mind testing this out with me? And then they go into different homes, and then I don't even know how the drug's administered. Do you? Is it through the air or something?
Yeah, I think she installs the gas canisters or something.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and they stay apart for 3 weeks?
Yes.
Is it? Yeah, and they do this thing. And then basically, there's this weird symbolism about 12:30 p.m. that I didn't get. I don't even know if I was meant to get. And the fact that she was cold all the time. But basically, they both like hallucinate, I guess, a son that they never had.
Yeah.
Right? But then they end up having to mourn because they never had the son, but they spent 3 weeks with the son kind of thing. And then he's gone. It's the oddest thing ever.
I found it really sad and kind of beautiful in a way. Because, you know, the idea of this presence program is that it creates the presence of someone you're mourning, but then what they don't realize is that it can also create the presence of someone who never existed or who you never met, who you're mourning and may not even not know. Yeah,
I get it. Because they both were kind of wanted a son, is it?
I think they both deep down they probably wanted to have a child, but you know, by the time they got married, it's like their third or second marriage. They were too old, and you know, the wife, she was like, she never really had a desire to have a child, but then this brings that out, you know, this program brings it out for both of them, and they meet.
It's eerie, but it's sad.
Yeah, it's
but it's still touching.
It is. It's very touching. Haunting, it's haunting. Yeah, and they both.
So odd though, like the whole concept. Anyways, yes.
The concept is really odd and like doesn't make any sense.
I guess that's what makes her, that's her brilliance, right? That people are praising her about.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's really just her imagination.
Yeah.
She has this really wild and deep imagination, and she just goes places and creates things that a lot of people, most people couldn't. So tell me about Books and Roses and why you liked it.
I think, you know, it was a love story, which I don't love. But it was about this girl and she's like, you know, an orphan, and then she grows up and becomes a laundry maid, and then she meets this woman who's an artist and hears her story. She also has a key. She also has a key. And then there's like a newspaper. Oh, I'm giving it all away. But do you know what I mean? There's like a newspaper article, and then the girl's like, oh, someone's looking for me. So she goes, and it turns out that this woman with a key and her with a key, like, their stories intermingle. But in the midst of that is, like, the young orphan girl's mum's story in the same kind of family and location. And it's beautiful because it's set in, like, a garden of roses, like, as the title gives, and a huge, like, you imagine a really ornate, beautiful library, you know? And I think the writing's really nice, like really beautiful in that too. And it's more these concepts are more like concepts I could kind of put my head around more easily, you know, and embrace more than, you know, like presents or there was that really odd story about that goose and stuff, you know. And so
there's some really strange ones. Luckily they were the shortest ones.
And so yeah, I think that's what I enjoyed. It was a good start to the book, and then I just started to get really lost.
I mean, who wouldn't love a story about books and roses? It reminded me a lot of, like, two stories that I really like The Secret Garden, which is also involves, like...
I've read that, I think.
Probably in your childhood sometime.
Yeah.
But basically, there's a secret garden, and there's a secret garden in this story too. And then the other story it reminded me of was Beauty and the Beast, Disney version. And you know how in that movie there's like a scene where the Beast gives her like the library? So, you know,
every girl's dream.
Exactly, like that fantasy of being gifted a library. It's just like
what kinda, a thing to be given.
I know, it's best most amazing present ever. So they were just some really like romantic elements, like not even in the sense of like love story romantic, but you know, just the romance of books and roses that
the whole setting.
Yeah, she like unraveled very so fragrant. Beautifully, and we're kind of butchering these stories and retelling them, but
oh my gosh,
the way that she tells them is very like gentle and whimsical.
Yeah, but even that, I mean, yeah, that one had a little bit more of a logical roadmap, I think, if you like sat after you finished the book, the story, and thought, oh, how do I piece these together?
Yeah.
But so many of the other stories, you had no hope.
It still had a lot of open ends, though. It's still like, who killed that person? What happened to the mother? What happened to her lover? I still have no idea. I want to know, but I know I'm never going to know. Yeah.
Because she thought they were going to get married. Okay, anyway, sorry, we'll stop. Do you know why the collection is called What Is Not Yours Is Not Yours?
I kind of cheated and I watched an interview with Helen Oyemi where someone asked her that question.
You're so useful. You're the most useful member of this podcast.
Well, what do you think it means?
No, I didn't know. That's what I'm asking you.
Okay. Well, I think before listening to it, I was thinking, okay, this title makes no sense. But this book is mainly about keys. And so I thought it might be about how like keys delineate like your property, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
spoken like a lawyer.
You know, you have a key to your house that's yours, but you don't have a key to your next door and it's not yours. I don't know. Like something very basic like that. That's all I could say. But she kind of said a similar thing. She said that it was, two things. I think I may have written it down somewhere and I can just read out her words because I'll probably butcher it.
Like we've butchered her book.
Yeah.
I hope she doesn't listen to this podcast like that other dude did. Your best friend.
Okay, but you know what? Like,
what?
I didn't read any actual reviews of this book, but the interviews I read, I got the impression that everyone was in the same boat as us. Like no one understood what the heck this book was talking about. And they were all just like, they would ask her really dumb questions like, oh, so like you like keys, hey, and do you own keys? Like have you ever
how many keys do you have?
What kind of keys?
Can we see your key chain?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And they're like, hey, like you seem to like fairy tales, huh? Like what's your favorite one? Like they seem to also like not really get the book, but I don't think it's a book.
Well, I guess the reviews that I read by like New York Times and stuff. I guess they were just pretending. How obnoxious.
They were definitely pretending.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I mean, that's their job to pretend and they're very, very good at it. I can't find it, but I think she basically said that it could either, it's something that either is kind of depressing a thought or a joyful thought. So like what is not yours is not yours. It's the depressing thought is that there are so many things that we desire, but we don't have.
Yeah.
And the joyful thought is like, but what you do have, it's your own.
Mm,
yeah, so it's those two opposing things.
Yeah, and keys, I guess, do stand guard in like both of those concepts. So
exactly.
Yeah, it's a very, very clever title.
So what did you think of the keys?
You know, keys are great. When I think of keys, I think of the one short story, which I thought the idea was very interesting, but it wasn't really explored or it was explored and I didn't get it, which is fine. Yeah. But you know, the story, I think it's the one, I think it's Sorry Doesn't Sweeten Her Tea. Mm. And the character, he's minding a house of locks.
Mm-hmm.
Is it that one? Yeah.
Yeah.
So his friend lives in a house that he bought for very cheap. And it's a very interesting house because it's full of rooms and corridors and doors.
Mm-hmm.
But you need a key to close a door.
Yeah.
Permanently.
Yeah.
So they permanently always stay open.
Yeah.
So when he walks into this house, he just sees like, you know, another door leading to another door. And, you know, he says it's very freaky because you don't know who might be behind, you know, another room. You know, you can't close all these doors and things like that. I thought that was like very haunting, but very interesting. And he or she, I can't remember. But that's one thing Oyeyemi does as well. Like she's very fluid in her gender And I almost feel like she doesn't care what gender they're in. Whereas, like, I feel like I want to classify everyone into a gender and a race, you know, or like a socioeconomic status or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways.
I mean, let's talk more about that later. But so like the House of Locks as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it was interesting, right?
Yeah, that was a really cool concept. And it's just that these doors don't close unless they're locked. And I'm just going to read like a couple of sentences about, you know, why that house exists. And it says,
okay,
apparently the house's first owner took a particular pleasure in fastening and releasing locks. The feel and the sound of the key turning until it finds the point at which the lock must yield. So for her, the house was a lifetime's worth of erotic titillation. And so like I read that and I laugh because I live in Korea, which is pretty much a keyless society. Like, we don't have keys. We have number security locks on our security pads or whatever on our doors, which is great because, you know, there's no chance of losing your key and, you know, getting locked out of your house.
Yeah.
So, but I recently did this thing called escape room.
Oh, that's right.
And escape room is this thing... if you're not familiar with it, where you go into a room and there's a bunch of clues and then it leads you to things like keys and passcodes that allow you to open other doors and other things that eventually let you escape that room.
Yeah.
It's like a fun game thing that you do with friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, during that escape room, you get a lot of keys and then, you know, you don't know where they go, but when you find it and then you put it in the hole and then it clicks, like there is this rush that you get. When that key clicks, and when I read this, I was like, oh yeah, like I understand that.
I'm with you, girl. Yeah, it's very interesting concept. But the funny thing is that this story starts off like that, but you think that the story will, you know, explore this idea and stay in this house or this person or that friend, but it's actually about two young teens in that character's family back at home away from the house with the locks.
Yeah.
It's like 70% of the story occurs here about two teens who really are like obsessed with this music idol, like a rock star or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he like ends up abusing like a prostitute or something, bashing her. And so they get really like disorientated and like hurt and caught up about it. Yeah. And it's about that. Yeah. And I was like, what? Why?
It goes in a completely unexpected direction. Yeah.
And so when I was reading that, I was like, what story is this again? Where? How did this start? How did we get here?
Yeah.
It's just like a classic example of this book.
But I think what what you're saying about how it takes you places where you don't even know where you started. Mm. I think that's her intention. I think when I was listening to interviews,
she's proud of that.
Yeah. And it also has, that also has to do with the keys, you know, it takes you through door after door and you don't know what's behind each door. And then you forget where you came as well. And so it's kind of like, and then you have to open those doors again to see like where you came. And so it takes you on this very, this very strange journey, I guess, that takes you to places that you never thought you'd end up.
It is quite clever, I guess.
Yeah.
Discussing it now. When I was in it, I was a bit frustrated.
Yeah, I understand like the frustration, but now I understand that this book is not one that is meant to be understood.
Yeah.
Or there's no symbolism. I think the one frustration I felt was that when I was reading, I was like, what does this mean? Like, what is this meant to symbolize? Like, is this a commentary on this? Like, is this a criticism of this? Is this a satire of this? And I think the answer to all of those questions is no.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think these things purely just came out of the author's imagination. And so when things happen that are
makes you feel a little better.
Yeah, exactly. We're not dumb. We are not dumb, okay?
And then people reading this, listening to this podcast, like, they're stupid.
No. We're not dumb, guys, okay? No one else understands this book.
Let us know, guys. Let us know, okay?
Yeah. so it's, some of the things that she says are so random and come out of nowhere that you think it must mean something.
Yeah.
But it actually doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
This comes out of her imagination.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. Like,
she's very imaginative.
And just to convince people that this is just not us making ourselves feel better. When I listened to this interview with Helen Oyeyemi, so I think this book was inspired by not only her love of keys, but also her love of fairy tales. And she talks about fairy tales and why she loves them. And she says it's because they're very simple, but they have incredible depth. But that depth is mysterious, and you can read whatever you want into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can...
Yeah, and on the other hand, it's mostly for kids, which is super interesting too.
Yeah, but she thinks fairy tales are actually for adults.
Oh, okay.
Because, like...
My bad.
I mean, the Disney version of fairy tales are for kids, but I don't know if you've ever read, like, the original Grimm fairy tales. They're very dark. Like, people get raped and things get... Body parts get chopped off and, like, stuff like that.
Oh,
no, I
didn't know it was that intense.
Yeah,
it's really intense. I see! On the topic of fairy tales, there's one that's very similar, like draws a very clear distinction and like a line between a fairy tale and her kind of spin. It's the Red Riding Hood one.
Yes.
It's called Donica and the St. Martin's Day Goose. Mm. Still not sure. Mm-hmm. But it's very interesting. Like there's this old woman with a red hood, like a cape.
Yeah.
And she's walking through a mountain and then she encounters a wolf who she doesn't think is a wolf. She thinks there's someone behind the wolf costume who just ate the wolf because there's like this rancid smell.
Mm-mm.
But then the wolf says to her she can pass because he wants to eat something young and fresh.
Yeah.
And then she's worried about who might come by and that the wolf might devour. So she promises to... when she gets back home to send something up that he could eat if he promises not to eat like another random person.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting, but the way the story turns is in a way weird and grotesque, but it makes no sense. Yeah. I don't know. What did you think about this one? It did capture my attention though.
Yeah, because the parallel with Red Riding Hood is so strong and I don't think any of the other stories have such strong a parallel.
No,
It was interesting, very, very strange. So, like, part of the story is that the wolf, I think, touches her hip, and then from that where he touched, she grows this lump of flesh.
He touched her so she would keep the promise.
Oh, okay. So, she grows this lump of flesh, and it's like, she says it smells like bread and honey or something like that.
Yeah.
And eventually she cuts it off.
Yeah.
Feed it to a goose.
Oh my gosh, doesn't she have this weird niece or something that's visiting her that keeps wanting to eat it or something?
Yeah.
It's so weird. Oh my gosh. Anyways.
Yeah. It's very strange.
Yeah.
She feeds it to the goose. The goose doubles in size. She feeds the goose to the
wolf. She puts a red cape on the goose too.
Yeah.
Which is, I really like that touch.
Just an extra bit of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of poetic-ish.
Let's dress up the goose. But
it was a Little Red Riding Hood, you know.
I did try to read into this a little bit, and this is completely my interpretation. But you know, there's no such thing as a wrong interpretation. You can read into it as much as you want.
I won't judge you.
I thought maybe it was like a satire of society's obsession with youth.
Uh-huh.
And how, like, you know, she wears this red cape and that's why he assumes that she's this young girl.
She's youthful.
But then she says something cool, like, because she's old, she can wear stuff like a red cape. She can wear whatever she wants.
Yeah,
but
and
then,
not care.
Yeah, and then he actually refuses to eat her because she's too old. And so in the end, she ends up feeding her this lump of flesh that's been fed to a goose that is in a cape. And he eats that and is satisfied.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I thought maybe it was kind of... a comment.
A funny poke.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. That's nice. I like that.
Do you have an interpretation?
No. I just thought it was odd. Yeah.
But, you know, there are a couple of stories that are definitely a little bit more clear that they are meant to say something, right?
Yeah, the one
that you mentioned, Sorry Doesn't Sweeten Her Tea, where it goes into this story of these girls who are obsessed about this rock star. And there are very strong parallels with story
definitely.
And, like, the Chris Brown, Rihanna story where basically they're, like, you know, there are people commenting that, you know, I would love to be like bashed by this guy. Like, you know, that's how crazy obsessive like his fans were. And then
And like blaming her.
blaming the girl, not trusting her. And then basically, like, the guy never actually apologizing.
No,
Yeah, and just writing a song about it. And then everything's forgiven. So I did.
But it was all, yeah.
I saw
Sorry, keep
that as a
going.
bit of a satire. And then that
Yeah.
that
I saw
story
that one.
too.
I saw that one. I totally got that one. That one was interesting. Just a study on like youth as well these days and how they can get become so obsessive. And how it can really profoundly impact the identity. Because the girl who had a real like huge obsession with this guy, she like goes through so many phases.
Like the
Of
stages
like
of grief.
accept, yeah, denial, anger, and then you know, and the weird places she just ends up because of like the comments she reads, the blogs that are written, comments on the YouTube, and that kind of thing. And so, yeah, it was, yeah, that was quite
It's
interesting.
kind of a coming of age story for her at least.
Yeah, it was, yeah, definitely.
But there's this other funny aspect of that story that's unrelated to the pop star, but like it had like one of the things
Oh, I know
that
what you're gonna say.
what
Oh, no, keep going.
it had a passage that actually kind of made me like laugh out loud. And
Okay, maybe it doesn't work. Yeah, go.
I'm gonna find it, but basically the main character in this story works at a weight loss clinic, and
Yes, this I knew you were gonna say this.
this weight loss clinic is this
The
weird
best.
Swedish method where they just knock you out for like 2 days, and you find that after 2 days you've dropped a dress size. So that's kind of a
'Cause you
satire
just
too.
slept
All you
and
did
you
was
didn't
sleep.
eat.
And it was discovered by someone who like took too many drugs and then woke up and had like lost a very impressive amount of weight. And so now she just created a clinic. But
Did you
then,
think this could happen?
oh yeah, it could totally happen. I'm sure it does happen.
Why
I'm
aren't
sure
we
it
getting
exists.
on
I'm sure
this?
it exists. Like, I'm sure there are some really weird, dodgy weight loss clinics out
I
there.
would do that. I want to sleep that long.
For the sleep.
Well, I mean, and the weight loss
And the
is a
weight loss. It's
gain-gain.
gain-gain,
Totally gain-gain.
But then he talks about how sometimes the people sleepwalk. And then there's one section that's really funny. I'm gonna read it the whole thing out. So he says, "Our other sleepwalker was just extremely hungry. You can't coax someone out of that. This client got up and searched for food with such determination that she had to have her drug dose significantly elevated. For a couple of hours, it seemed her hunger was stronger than the drugs. I sat out the third intervention and stayed in the monitor room watching the camera feed. It was fascinating to watch her returning to the surface of sleep, crying, 'Chips, chips.' But eventually she went down hard and stayed under. Ultimately, she was happy with her results, but apart from the usual disorientation, she also looked really thoughtful, as if asking herself, 'Worth it? She probably won't be back.'" And I'm just like, yeah, that's me. Like that
it.
was if I that would be me if I like tried this
You wouldn't
crazy
just lay
method.
still.
I would go out and hunt for chips, and then I would never be back because I was like, no, this is not worth it. I want to eat my chips.
I think the people like maybe listening to the podcast right now are thinking like, yeah, how can one book with nine short stories contain so many interesting ideas? And I guess that's what's so like amazing about this book. Now I'm convinced that I like this book.
Great. This is the purpose of the podcast, you know, to help us. We fall in love with books as we record this, you know?
Sometimes.
Or we like delude ourselves into loving a book.
Well, I am an external processor, so maybe that's
That's
it.
true.
I'm like, yeah, there was this. Oh, yeah, this was good too. And so I'm like, oh,
Yeah,
maybe
I
I
would say
enjoyed this
almost
book.
every sentence includes a crazy idea.
It was really great.
Yeah, and that's really a testament to her imagination and her writing. But let's
So I
go
think
back.
if you're
Oh, yeah.
prone to, yeah, keep going.
No, you continue.
Oh, I was just gonna say if you're like prone to OCD and you really like things in neat boxes, probably don't read this book. But if you're willing to like relax a bit,
I
then
think even if you
definitely.
are prone to OCD, I think you should learn to relax by reading
Oh,
this
this is a
book.
healthy exercise.
OCD is a disease, guys, okay?
Maybe Matt should read it.
Oh, he'd hate it. He would literally put it down after the second sentence, so.
Yeah, it'll be good for him.
Okay, maybe.
Anyways,
But I
what were
was
you gonna
gonna
say?
say, back to the whole thing about how you said like sexuality and gender was very fluid in this book.
Yeah.
I think one thing I really liked and appreciated about this book was that there was so much diversity in the characters in terms, in all ways, in terms of race, gender, sexuality, but it does that, but then it doesn't make diversity the main issue. It doesn't push the point, like, you know, this person's black, this person's Asian, like, this person's queer, and, like, that's their story. Like, it's just a very...
And that's where they get their identity. And,
like, exactly. No, it's not about that. It's just background. It's just a normal part of this world. Like, these are just normal people in a normal world. And it... And that, I think it really realistically reflects, you know, the world that we live in. The world that we live in is diverse, and not a lot of books represent that well.
Yeah. Yeah, I found it very interesting how she did that. And I learned something about the way I read as well, like you said.
Mm.
Like, I think when I encounter a character in a book, I'm already starting to kind of draw them in my mind and, like, learn more about them. So I'm, like, compiling, like, a character, you know, profile. You know, of every character, you know, and so I'm like, oh, female, this age, you know, this gender, this race, or this role in society, like mom, dad, you know, do you know what I mean? Like, a lot of things that you can kind of draw stereotypes from, or like assumptions, but she really doesn't care. And so a lot of the book, you don't learn much at all. And maybe like 3/4 of the way through, you're like, oh, it's a she, you know, or something.
Yeah,
because to her, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You know, but whereas I realize it must matter a lot to me because of the way I was like searching for these things. Like my eyes are always like, you know, grasping on to like, oh, girl, oh, this, you know. Mm. And so, I thought that was very revealing.
Yeah, it's a very interesting way to be challenged. You know, I did feel really challenged as a reader reading this book in a good way.
Yeah.
And like, I think she does it deliberately too. I think she doesn't just do it because she literally doesn't care, but you have to be very deliberate in not revealing a character's gender until like halfway through the book.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, halfway through the story. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's frustrating, but I understand why she does it. Yeah, she does a really good job. And, you know, you know enough about the character. To where you do get to a point where it really doesn't matter whether they're male or female, what race they are, like where they're from.
Yeah. And it makes you think, why does it matter so much to you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And exactly.
I read one interview with her where, like, someone basically said, like, oh, yeah, like, you really write about race and gender, like, you know? And then she's like, I do? Like, how do I? And then they say, the interviewer said, you know, I think a lot of people would argue that it's not possible to put women and black people in a story and not have it be political. And then she says something that I really, really liked. And she says, I don't know. That's basically like saying that my life, the very life that I'm living, and my body are political. And sometimes I think that I'm just living. I think that art and politics are inseparable in lots of ways, but you can't force these things and you can't separate things out into these categories. Like, oh, this work of fiction deals with this or that. If a novel is good, then it should contain as much life as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she just represents life as she sees it. And, she doesn't feel like she has to write, like, justify the fact that her characters are female or queer or black or Asian or Indian, you know?
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed, like, just having that as, like, the backdrop to these stories.
What an amazing writer at 31, hey.
I know. It is one of those sad things where you think, what am I doing with my life?
Oh.
But, you know, she's...
talk about that now?
she's a very...
Our lives?
She's a very rare breed.
Yeah.
She's a very, very, very rare breed.
Does that make you feel better,
talent.
Heather?
Yeah, look, I'm a rare breed too, okay?
Yeah?
Yeah, and so are
in
you.
What?
You're a special
in which
snowflake.
You're crazy.
We're doing our part to make this world a better place.
We are. Yeah. We have a podcast.
Exactly.
You know what? For the people that don't know, I'm, like, looking for a job at the moment. Yeah, hire me. Anyways, but I haven't gone to any interviews yet. But I was thinking that I kind of want the interviewer to ask me, like, what my hobbies are. Because I want to be like, oh, I have a podcast? Like, where else in my life could I just casually, like, pop that in there and, like, hopefully be impressive? That's pretty impressive, isn't
That's really impressive. Like, I don't see a lot of interviewees, like, walking in being like, yeah, I have my own podcast.
Yeah, usually people are like, oh, I play guitar sometimes. I'm like, no, you don't. You touched it like 3 years ago and you just like say you do. You know, but like I have a legit hobby and I'm in communication, so it's very, you know.
Exactly. And you.
Yeah, it just fits.
You don't have an issue with a recruiter potentially Googling this podcast and listening to it?
I don't think they could find it.
Oh. I think
I also go by a different name.
Oh, you're not Minju, you're Rachel.
Yeah.
I see. Because
yeah, I don't think
if you search Minju Kim podcast, pretty sure it will come up. Google's pretty smart.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-oh. Fair enough. Uh-oh. What if they ask like, oh,
can you delete my name from all the?
What if they ask what it's called? That's a very like standard follow up question.
Oh yeah. Uh-oh.
Just think this through.
Nah, I'll just be like, oh, it's just about books.
No. Just tell them, and so we get more listeners, okay?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. What about my job?
Theater's marketing.
Hey, you know, when do you think Audible's going to contact us for an ad?
Oh, I think it's like any minute
now. Do you know what I'm talking
about? Yeah. Like, literally, yeah. The phone call could come at any second. I have, like, my phone constantly in my hand. Yeah. But Minju, there's just one more thing I want to talk about this book.
Oh, sorry. Okay? Oh, okay. Sorry.
And I'm surprised that you haven't mentioned it. Okay?
Okay, I'll focus.
It's something completely random, but there is random Korean things in this book. Oh,
I know. Yeah, there's so much Korean in this book. What's going on?
When at the beginning of Sorry Doesn't Sweeten Your Tea, there is a Korean poem, right? And it's in Hangul.
Like, this is odd.
Yeah.
Whoa, bro, don't go all Korean on us.
I was actually going to ask you to recite the poem in Korean.
Oh, ooh.
Do you want to do it?
Poetic. It's very exotic for our non-Korean listeners.
Totally. Yeah. No. Okay, fine.
No, because our Korean listeners will laugh.
Fine.
Yeah.
But you know what? When I first saw that poem, I was like really confused. And I was like, did the book suddenly like change? My Kindle suddenly changed books? Or I was like, am I reading like a region-specific version of this book?
Oh, because you know, that's
like
true.
Sometimes movies like they change like tiny details like depending on what country you're in.
Yeah.
And so
no, I literally considered is this a different book? Is there a glitch in the system?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, why is a Korean all of a sudden in a book written by a Nigerian British author?
Yeah,
but it doesn't end there.
I know the presence. It's in the present story, yeah. Right? They're obsessed with K-pop.
Exactly. In the present story, one of the characters is Korean.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, she's adopted.
Yeah. And they like 2 p.m., right?
Yeah, they talk about soju, they talk about K-pop, they talk about 2 p.m. Yeah. They talk about a song called What's Wrong With My Age, which I Googled, and it's actually a real song. It's like a trot song. Is. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that
you
song.
You know that when song.
I got this song.
Yeah.
When I got this song. Anyways.
How does she know this much?
I don't know what's going on. Maybe she's married to a Korean. They never discussed it in all those interviews she listened to.
I don't think she's married.
Oh, well.
Yeah, like they, I don't, I, okay, look, I did Google Helen Oyeyemi partner. Nothing came up.
What about Helen Oyeyemi career?
I Googled that too. And I saw that a couple years ago that she came to Korea for like a writer's festival. And she said something like, I really wanted to come to Seoul this year. So maybe she's just one of those people who has like this odd fascination with Korean culture.
There are a lot of people like that, especially in Europe.
Oh, there are?
Yeah, like in Paris and stuff, they have the hugest K-pop concerts and stuff.
Oh.
And there's so many European people, like German, French and stuff, that come to Korea and like learn Korean and they love Korean culture and K-pop. And they're like literally blonde, blue-eyed people.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, it's like sense. A weird thing. Yeah.
So it's, okay. So she's obviously but like still, a closet 2 p.m. fan.
Yeah, but it doesn't really fit her profile.
It really doesn't, but it made me like her.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
It made me want to be friends with her.
I didn't know that being Korean was so relevant these days.
It's totally cool now.
Yeah.
We're like the coolest people in the world.
But it's not like mainstream like Japan is, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, it's still like really indie and edgy and like...
It's super indie.
Yeah. Our very existence is indie.
Because we are so not indie like you and I.
Maybe Helen Oyeyemi would really, like, love the fact that two Korean girls are reviewing this book.
Oh, we're Korean now.
Yeah, we're Korean. Hey, I live in Korea. I'm 100% Korean. Okay, I listen to 2 p.m.
I'm pretty sure at other times you identify more with being Australian, but
No,
now you're
I'm
choosing to be
totally
Korean.
Korean.
Oh, okay.
I'm
Okay, sorry, I didn't
100%.
know.
100%.
Okay, well, I'm a Kiwi, so.
Whatever. That is
Nah, not
literally
Korean.
nothing New
Korea
Zealander
forever.
about you, okay? You are like the most
What? I
Korean
say
person I
some
know.
words funny. Like, I can't say Ellen. Like, Ellen? Ellen?
What are you saying? What are
Anyways,
you trying
I'm
to
trying
say?
to
I
say
don't.
Ellen.
As in the name
You
Alan?
know, no, the talk show Ellen.
Oh, you're definitely saying Alan as in the men's name.
Okay, so I'm going to say Ellen? Ellen?
This does not prove your New Zealandness in any way, shape, or form.
No, because they say funny apparently. I can't say like L's or like. Anyways, all right, we're totally on a tangent now. Like this book.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up, guys.
Anyways.
Let's wrap this up.
Okay, so on the topic of all the Korean links that are in this book,
Yeah.
the next book that we're reading is Korean
Yes.
because she mentions it in the book.
Yeah.
And we thought it would be like a very clever way to choose our next book. I think we've always tried to do like new releases
Yeah.
to be relevant, but this one isn't. This one was written like
Yeah.
6 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, I'm very proud of how clever we're being because what we're doing is like we're taking a key from this book. Yeah, we're
Oh,
taking a key from this book and it's gonna open a door and we don't know what lies
Shut up.
behind it.
Who knows?
Mind
It's
blown.
a mystery.
I know, right? Okay, it's
Oh,
like,
wow.
yeah, we're
Wow, we're
taking it to the
brilliant.
next level. I'll give you some background. So in one of these stories, it's a story that we have not mentioned yet. It's set in Cambridge and there are these two clubs. Like one is a men's only club and one is a women's only club. They're rivals. And so one day the women's club decides that it would be funny to like break into the men's only club's like clubhouse and do a book swap because they only have books written by men and the women's group only have books written by females. So they do this book swap and then they get very disappointed at the fact that the books that they have stolen are actually very good. And that these guys have very good taste. And one of the book that is specifically mentioned is by a Korean author. The book is called Your Republic Is Calling You, but I forget the author's name. His name is
His
Young
name is
Ha
Kim
Kim.
Yong Ha.
Yeah, Young Ha Kim. And so,
Can you read it like a Korean, please?
look, Amazon.com calls him Young Ha Kim, okay? He is a Korean author, so this book is originally in Korean, translated into
Yeah.
English.
That's a first for us too.
Completely first. Have you ever read a Korean book translated into English?
Not knowingly.
Yeah, I didn't even know that concept
Well, no,
existed.
I meant I know I what? Of course. Anyways, but no, I don't think I've ever knowingly read a book that's been translated from another language even.
What? No, really?
Or I've been dumb and thought those classics existed in English.
Okay. Oh, wow. It's your first translated
Anyways,
book. Wow.
but it's
Okay.
my first Korean translated, yeah.
Yeah, mine too.
Maybe I should.
Yeah, but it's called The Republic Is Calling You. It's set in
I'm
the
very excited.
entire book spans just one day in the life of a North Korean spy who's been living in Korea for a very long time and gets a cryptic message that tells him to sell everything and come home. So it sounds like a fascinating read. And
They say it's like a thriller.
the characters in Helen Oyemi's book loved it, so hopefully we will love it too.
Yes. And it hopefully will make more sense.
Yeah.
Anyways,
Anyway.
thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks for listening to us.
Yeah, that went better than I thought.
Yeah, it did. It was a really hard book to discuss, but I think we did a pretty good job. Yeah.
Pat on the back to
Yeah,
us.
pat on the back to us. And well done us for, reviewing our first short story collection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hope you guys enjoyed it as well.
All right, bye guys. See you next month.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Thanks. Bye.